Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That is a fact. That is true. Welcome to True Things.
What's his face? Something. And our producer, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
I feel like the gang's all together. You, me, Bryce.
The other guy.
Other guy.
No, hey. Man. We got a world traveler.
Hey guys, did you?
Went out for a pack of cigarettes in Tokyo.
Did you miss me? I was gone from the show for a while. Now I'm back.
Tell us about your journey, man.
It's Justin Robert Young. That's who it is.
Hey, I'm back. Yes. Japan was amazing. Japan was great, and it put a lot of stories into context because Andrew used to tell me stories of his trips to Japan, and I cannot imagine being in that country, not only without internet, but without ubiquitous on the phone internet. Like, we got ourselves into jams and we had a device in our hands that could literally live translate street signs because of Google Translate. I can't imagine dealing without those kinds of tools.
I mean, in a pre-internet era, a trip to Japan, especially if you weren't very wealthy, if you just went to see what it was like, I mean, that would feel like an alien civilization, a place where you can't read or write or talk to other people.
Now imagine living there as I did.
How long did you live there?
Half a year.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm so jealous. I'm sad that I'm the last person here. You've probably already been to Japan, Bryce.
Yeah, but I'll never be able to grow up in Norway.
Okay. Well, then hopefully I'll get there before you. I'll do that before I die, damn it.
Brian just walks out of frame. We hear the sound of the door and a car squealing. quick text.
Sayonara,
put some TV dinners in the oven for the kids.
Exactly. No, listen, at one point, Brian's just not going to be here. And we're going to find out that Bryce booked a trip to Japan in 6 months.
Yeah.
And so he has to go immediately.
No. It becomes a cannonball run to get to Japan for bragging rights.
Japan is an amazing country. There's so much that is similar and obviously so much that is very, very different. The biggest thing, though, and it's hard to overhype it, is the trains. The trains. They're just there's so many of them. They're so on time. They don't smell like urine. They move a million people. Like, it's just crazy.
They were amazing. Yeah, the bullet train. I remember my experience of the bullet train was going to the bullet train station, walking out on the platform and standing here kind of just waiting. And I'm the only one close to the edge of the platform, which should have told me something. You know, everybody else a little further away from this. And an express went through.
Like a concussive,
so
just blast.
Train go through really fast, and I'm just a couple feet away from the platform, and boom! I'm like, I just turned to everybody else. I was doing a magic show there. I was with a bunch of dancers. I just turned to them. I'm like, mouth wide open, like, you can do that here?
Oh, yeah. No, it was wild. I mean, it was like an hour and a half from Tokyo to Nagano, which shaves about, I think it's like an hour, 45 minutes from what it would be otherwise. It's crazy.
Yeah. What was your two biggest takeaways from the things that surprised you?
Two biggest takeaways. Number one, culture difference. Smoking outside, illegal, which means smoking inside, very prevalent. and that's something that I was not ready for. It's something that kind of affects you on a daily basis. The second was really just in general, there is a little bit less of, like, basically there is an exact opposite of whatever you would imagine needs to go into a culture to produce somebody slapping a taxi and saying, I'm walking here, right? It's the inverse of that is Japanese culture. It is very non-confrontational, but as I learned talking with more people, very judgy, but very non-confrontational. So it's like you are always being watched. And I guess, you know, foreigners get kind of an excuse for not knowing all the rules to the hokey pokey, but there's definitely just culture differences that are constantly being monitored.
Non-confrontational makes me feel like it's this social blockchain where it's just like your punishment is that this goes on your whispered record behind the scenes.
Effectively. And you know, I started digging into stuff like the smoking, for example. There is a huge paradox between smoking rates in Japan and lung cancer rates. Like they are less likely to get it than Americans who smoke the same amount of cigarettes. It's a weird thing. It's a good thing we're talking about on this podcast, but it's just something that exists. Now, inversely, if you look at suicide rates, they're almost double what they are in America and the rest of Europe. And if I were to totally pop sociology kind of guess part of why is because I think that there is, you know, your whispered record is something that is a real thing, that there is social capital that is managed by your reputation. And if you screw up or you feel like you've screwed up, then I think that pressure can be tremendous.
Yeah. In America, if a teacher yells at you in class, the parents sue the school. In Japan, teacher yells at you at class, your kid is on suicide watch.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like I'm being harsh. It's actually part of it. It's the trade-offs, you know, and it's a trade-offs. And I lived there, enjoyed it, loved the people and all that, but it's a very, very different sort of thing. And that's, we have to often ask, we go, oh, I love it over here in this country. Like, that may be great, but there are trade-offs there. And maybe those trade-offs are better, you know, but there often very much are, there are differences there. And, you know, gender disparities there, you know, it is, you know, we clearly have a sexism problem here. And, you know, watching the whole Me Too thing unfold just makes you realize, man, like how much we ignore that goes on around us. You know, you go to other cultures where that's just inconceivable. They wouldn't even, why are women complaining? You know, sort of mentality, which, right.
I will also say, man, some of those anime girls look young. Uncomfortably young. Some of these anime girls.
Like, I remember sitting on the train and looking across me. This businessman, this, you know, normal good suit, you know, guy going to business suitcase. I'm going to business, reading a comic. I'm like, oh, cool. He's reading a comic. It's kind of cool. That's why I love Japan. And I looked, and it was like one of the really rapey anime, you know, manga, you know. And I'm like, huh, this is interesting. My everything that I needed to learn, and again, it is an amazing, wonderful culture. But I remember I turned on the TV one night and I see this game show, and there's like six or eight guys sitting down at desks trying to do math problems, right? Trying to do math problems. And you're like, oh, it's kind of interesting. This is like, that's why they're so good at math. And then a girl comes out, takes off her blouse, and rubs her breasts in their faces as they're trying to do math problems. Like, huh, now I really know why they're good at math. And I also know why there's some kind of some gender imbalances here, because this is considered okay, you know? That was a real show.
Yeah.
There was a fantastic lecture that I took at Wizard Academy where they were talking about the difference between introverted and extroverted societies.
Wait, back up. Wizard Academy?
Oh, dude. Wizard Academy is the jam. It's you don't find it. It finds you. It's a business. They have business classes and stuff. When are you in Austin? I should take you out there.
Wait. No, back up.
What?
Oh, yeah, I just got to, you know, get business school, business class, you know, Wizard Academy.
Yeah, it was founded.
Is this in some guy's basement?
No, it's a wizard tower. I mean, I guess.
No. All right,
wizard tower.
Yeah, hold on. Let me try to bridge, because Brian's talking about Wizard Academy a lot, and I think you're just like, well, yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I've talked about it a million times. I don't need to talk about how much I love it again. But Andrew has no idea. So here's what it is. It is this gorgeous, like, castle, basically, out in the hill country of Austin around where Brian's house is, and they do a ton of seminars and some regular classes, but it's by and large just a bunch of cool people that they do these, like, you know, longer form, multiple day seminars and stuff.
Yeah. And of course, friends of the show of the Modern Rogue run a channel called the Whiskey Vault. And they have actually they started in the last couple of years doing the world's first whiskey sommelier program, or I guess the first in the United States. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. But in the class, we were talking about the difference between introverted and extroverted societies and how you can kind of see introversion, extroversion just across America, because the farther west you go, the more as a biological safety net it is to be extroverted. Because when you plant your flag in the ground, you walk over the 3 miles to meet your neighbor because you're way out there and you're going to need their help at some point. And so you know, it's a tactical advantage, you know, whereas a lot of places that are more crowded, especially in the East, you know, tend to be more introverted. But specifically, he was bringing up Japan, where the society as a whole is so introverted. That's what, you know, like, you'll be packed in like sardines on a bullet train, but nobody will say a word. Everybody is enjoying their own privacy, quiet time and stuff. And then the flip side is, you know, when you want to balance the scales, they have that's part of why karaoke happens, because you have a little booze and then you bust out and get to, you know, extrovert for a little bit, is the way he represented it anyway.
Yeah, it was a great time.
I see that difference. I've described, you know, we're talking, to me, like, I sort of said Japan to me a lot was a lot like sort of like Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah. The introversion, there is that everybody's in a little bubble. It's why they can be, you know, it is that you, that how do you get pushed into this, you know, put 1,000 people into one car or whatever like this. You just tune everything out, you know, and it is, I would say that people were super, super polite though, and willing to help though. I'd be walking downtown Tokyo and like totally lost, like, and somebody come up, speak perfect English. Oh, can I help you out? You know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we had multiple people come and just understand that these wayward foreigners just needed to be pointed in the right direction, specifically early on.
And I would say too, like, my experience in New York City, anytime I stopped or asked somebody for, hey, can you help, everybody help me. The body language is don't bother me. But like, hey, I'm lost. You know where such and such is? Like, oh yeah, it's over here. Da da da. Okay. That was my experience too.
And like, I know it's always meant in a positive way, but I have never been told more often what I ought to do than when I spend time in New York City. It's like, it was like, well, the burger joint's over there, but what you ought to do is always constantly.
Yeah. And that is a weird sort of dichotomy, because like you go to a big city like New York, you're like, oh man, everybody's trying to get to where they're going and you're just afraid. And they're like, hey, can you help me find this? And if they can't have time, like, sorry, I don't have time. But somebody else is like, oh yeah, da 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 da. And you're like, oh, like, we're just in our own little zone. But if I tell them I need help or whatever, strangers have been extremely, you know, helpful there. Which, you know, is one of the things once you get over that. I thought what was interesting too was like the host culture, and like you go to like a shop in the middle of nowhere and they'll sit you down, pour you tea and all this, which is sort of, and not even speak the same language, but that was interesting.
Well, of course, there is also the host.
Oh, the host culture. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I found out Bryce is missing. A tremendous windfall of being a host.
We explored this a little bit on Night Attack this past week. You can see some of the photoshops if you look at the Night Attack Twitter feed. But yeah, it does look like Bryce was born just on the wrong side of the planet.
Yeah, no, because I'm walking down the street and I just keep seeing these billboards, and I'm like, all these guys look like Bryce. Like, they have like very Bryce like features and Bryce adjacent hair.
And the billboards, very generous. The billboards just look like models. Like, I would say it looks like a super group boy band, or
that's maybe what I thought. I initially thought it was like a boy band, and I'm like, oh my God, look at this. All these people look like Bryce. And so I put it in the Discord, and Bryce is like, yeah, they're hookers. And it's like, well, I mean, technically not, but also maybe. You know.
I mean, given the past history of Lou Pearlman's boy bands and what's gone on there, there's not really that much of a difference.
Yeah, fair point. But yeah, no, so, but that's a whole thing. I mean, there's a just another element of society there, and specifically, I think, you know, relative to what Brian was saying in the, like, why a communal activity like karaoke is so popular. There's also just the idea of, I want companionship of somebody to talk about, or somebody to talk about my day, talk about my life. And it would be better if it was somebody that I found attractive. And you know, it kind of comes back to the idea of the snuggle cafe from oh so many episodes ago.
Yeah.
The snuggery that, you know, at some point it's like there is a price to be paid for companionship. There is a drive. There is a genre of entertainment that is, please make me feel like a human.
Well, which brings me to our first topic. You see the what caught a lot of attention, the biggest thing that probably got out of CES?
No, I have a feeling that I can guess now that for that lead up, the biggest thing
I would, in my estimation of what got, I saw more coverage people talking about wasn't actually really a product. It was more of a demo, and that was the sex bots on display at the strip club.
That's right. They were bad dancers. Everyone was disappointed because they weren't sexy enough. They're like, boo, I don't want to have sex with that.
You know, I think other people had a different reaction, Brian. You know, like some, I think people were expecting like full on fembots from Westworld or whatever.
Right.
But yeah. They pulled on scene robots at CES. And I would say we've come a long ways, though. But yeah, they don't do a lot of movement there. And if you can find some video of the movement there, though, but you just sort of, they just do one thing. And if you're expecting, like, you know,
right.
Like, if
you're not going to get a multi-phase dance routine.
Evan Rachel Wood, you know, no.
Yeah,
exactly. Although I am very much looking forward to the John Henry to this Inky Poo.
When this is an art piece.
She dies from out dancing the bot.
From out dancing the bot. In the humanity's last day.
She's like, I did it for you. Sorry, Bryce, what were you saying?
So this was an art piece that apparently was at CES 5 years ago or so. And was partially a big deal because it was back at CES.
It's so robot strippers is what they call them. Robot strippers. But there was also a lot of other, there's also been a lot of developments now in the whole robot sex doll. You see a lot more coverage, at least on Matt Drudge, which, you know, the Drudge Report. Maybe it says something else. I don't know. But we're, you know, sooner. I mean, they already have, like, remember years ago, the real doll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and we're getting to the point that these things are going to become more prevalent.
Well, and think about, man, I don't want to make it too salacious, but like with the addition of VR, that was what I thought you were going to bring up, is all the new VR stuff that was announced. But like for people who want to treat sex like going number three, you can strap on a VR set and have strap a doll on. And then that's that aspect. You don't have to think about it.
I would explain why the Oculus controller looks like it does.
Yeah.
It's certainly a direction we're going to there. And it's one of these things that we'll see what happens to what degree, how fast do these things happen? There was so much coverage for those, you know, mannequin legs.
They really were.
Well, it's just because people, number one, covering CES, I have never done it myself, but as it has been described to me, can be a bit of a drudgery. And there's only so many times you can report specs for televisions or list how many voice assistants this pencil sharpener has before you just want to shoot yourself. So the idea that you can, like, use your company card to go to Sapphire's and write about the robot you know, the robot strippers is something that I'm sure was very exciting for many reporters.
Sure.
Engadget has a headline. There's a new sex robot in town. Say hello to Solana.
Move over, fleshlight.
And by the way, I got to say, the editor-in-chief of Engadget, his hair is on point. It's quite luxurious. I can see if you can see this. There you go. Yeah.
So this is Harmony and Solana.
Hands on. He does have gorgeous hair.
Nondescript motel.
Fabio-esque.
I am here.
Reminds
with
me of the Kids in the Hall sketch where the guys who work in the auto shop and they've got the one guy with the luxurious care and it's all the source of pride for them. The next to him is Fred Armisen testing out a new character.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Quite possibly the first sex robot to hit the market.
So, if you told me that these two were the Postal Service, I'd believe it.
It's been a bit over a year since
the band.
Yeah. And you've made some improvements to Harmony. What are we going to see today?
Well, I wanted to demo how easily an end user could actually change the face on the robot. So you would be able to have multiple characters. So not only changing the face, but
now understand, we're just looking at the head and cleavage, not even boobs.
Yeah, it's it's really disturbing, sort of strange. Design is that you can, but I guess they're showing off just individual parts. Run on the same
robotic hardware. Yeah. Right, and you're going to be showing us another female face today.
Correct.
As well as a female avatar. But you do have plans, and you're in the works of making a male version of the doll.
Yeah. So had this event been a few weeks later, I would have been able to bring a male head here. And
so how much
that works? So that's really
ostensibly, if you could make a case for this is a healthy thing to for people who don't have ongoing relationships to fill the void, or at least to feel. Oh, god damn. Sorry. They just peel off her face. I was unprepared for that.
Now, as she sits there, she blinks, by the way, to like give you this sort of light. Yeah. Like,
Ultimate movie at the CES, I think.
Yeah. And so this is very sort of classic
Westworld. Oh, my god.
You can see that.
Oh, my god.
He just rips it off like a mask, like a Halloween mask.
Oh, it looks like a living nightmare.
Those corresponding magnets are inside of the face.
Oh,
so any
kill it.
And also, like, the eyes still have the eyelashes on them, which it just makes it look like Lady Skeletor.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to kiss a real woman again, either. I'd just be afraid that that's underneath.
I know. What have you been hiding, ladies?
Yeah, I think that you're gonna see like they have like I know in like the when I say I know I don't know everybody but like in the kind of the sort of just sit there sort of sex doll sort of you know environment like they have a number of them that like look like they do ones that look like famous porn stars and I'm sure there's gonna be times where you're gonna start getting you know mods you know the Maya Angelou whatever you know. reads you poetry. I mean, come on. Yeah. What would be better than pillow talk with Maya?
She's like, I found that people will never forget how I make them feel. I'm Maya Angelou. Lay down.
Oh God.
Point is that like I think I sent a link. Did we do the thing about how somebody they're able to like take like porn and map other people's faces?
Yes, using machine learning. The story was they fed in a bunch of pictures of Gal Gadot and basically machine learning did a pretty good facsimile of her opening up a sex toy. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that was one of the things we've talked about here before is it becomes possible to like put cameras and invade people's privacy everywhere. It's also becoming easier. You can also create these fakes. And the bad news with the fakes is that, you know, we could be weeks away from like a Brian Brushwood sex tape, but
I mean, I already have the mustache for
Brian
it.
Brian can claim it's digital, it's faked, and now people will believe it. Not like, oh yeah, like you know, I won't name a certain boxer who they got, you know, dressed up as a woman, insisted it was a fake. It's Photoshop.
Can't Photoshop those fishnets, dog.
Yeah.
Other curious thing is that the recourse to get rid of leaked stuff is to claim copyright. Like, that's my property. You have to take it off. But in the case of somebody making a fake about you, I guess on the one side, you get to say that's definitely a fake. But meanwhile, like, you don't get to say take it down. That's my likeness. That's my image. It's all like, so what? None of that matters.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see because that is – that'll be an interesting area to see if you could use likeness. But the problem, of course, is like you could say, hey, take it down. But in the internet, great. It's not going to be on an official site, but it'll be somewhere. But
right.
But if the idea, if you have started having a flood of these fakes and things like this, you don't know what to believe. Like when they had the Fappening, you know, there's stuff out there. Oh, this came from there. And I was like, Photoshop was fake, but you just don't know. And I think it'll get to a point where nobody will care.
In the chat, they're asking, what about life rights? Well, I mean, the obvious thing they would do is say it's not about, you know, like, oh, this is not about Gal Gadot. This is about Shal Shallow, totally fictional person. It's a totally unique property, like Ricky Rouse or Monald Muck.
Yep. It's going to be curious. We're going to talk Zuma.
Oh,
well,
man.
I'll tell you what, before we get into that, well, I don't know what all you guys got into last week, but apparently all sorts of stuff going on Twitter over the last 7 days. But first, let's remind everybody that you can support this show by going to patreon.com/weirdthings and contributing to this fine program. No matter what, we're making these episodes for you, even if one of the co-hosts is a total flake and takes several weeks off for his own whims in Japan. Well, this show keeps a rolling thanks to everybody who kicks in whatever they can at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Heck yes. Don't forget also, you get your special RSS feed so that you get a rock block, not only Weird Things, but you get After Things all in one feed for you because you're special.
And a day early.
Yeah. Those RSS feeds, man, if you are a patron now and you're not taking advantage of it, you really should. They are the bomb. So go ahead and check it out. patreon.com/weirdthings. All right. So Zuma, this was apparently this is here's all I know based on just our Twitter or reactions that people had on Twitter was that you guys were like, well, look at this. Zuma went up perfect. Everything's great. Isn't SpaceX amazing? And then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. Catch me up. What the hell happened?
So last week, SpaceX had a launch. It was like a week ago Sunday. They had a launch, and it was the secretive satellite or secret payload. We didn't even know what it is, called Zuma. Zuma, well, all we know that was officially announced about Zuma was SpaceX was launching it. Northrop Grumman had built the payload, and the client, we don't know who the client was. No, in an agency, they'd ask, like, you know, like, the Pentagon, is it yours? It's like, no, and like, you know, nobody wanted to admit to who it was. So it was a secret payload. Presumably a satellite. SpaceX was supposed to provide the launch, and then Northrop Grumman was providing the payload, and they'd apparently built the adapter, which goes to the second stage, which is how the thing would then detach or go whatever. Okay. SpaceX does part of the covers part of the launch. They show part of the launch, then they cut out at a certain point because they don't want to show, you know, the classified portion of it. And first stage comes back, does what it's supposed to be, the rest of the rocket goes up. Everything proceeds as far as there's everything supposed to be is supposed to go. There is an entries made into the catalog of orbital objects as this object is entered, da 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 da. And SpaceX is like, all right, yay for us. All right, we're done. And then we covered it on Monday. We're like, yep, you know, looks like Zuma successful launch. Zuma was successful, blah, blah, blah. Great job. And ho hum, you know, SpaceX landed another rocket. Well, then stories started to come out. Like Wall Street Journal and other people were like, oh no. Zuma, and it was like SpaceX has a failure. Zuma is a failure. Rumors are that Zuma failed, that SpaceX failed. And you'd see these headlights. And you'd say, like, here we are, Wall Street Journal. U.S. spy satellite, I believe, lost after SpaceX mission fails. Okay. So you start hearing SpaceX failure, SpaceX failure. You don't hear Northrop Grumman. Nobody knows who that is, even like one of the biggest military space contractors there is, right?
But also Northrop Grumman is them having a failure is not news, right? That's happened a lot. Right. They put a lot of stuff up. And whereas SpaceX having a failure or anything that could be look like a I mean, that's newsworthy.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's inaccurate, though. We don't know. The point is that the problem is like, yes, agreed. We could use SpaceX because everybody knows what it is. Nobody knows what Northrop is. So they'll do like, you know, oh, SpaceX failure. Like, well, maybe they effed up. We don't know. But, you know, it's one of these things where nobody wants to put Northrop in the title where that would appear to be, by all accounts, something happened to the payload and what we're hearing. Either this is a really clever ruse. In a few weeks' time, we're going to find out this thing actually made it to orbit because we don't know. We didn't see anything fall back down that wasn't supposed to. There's just been reports and reports. And one of the things you have is SpaceX did this was a big profile in the industry launch because it's a government payload, maybe one of the most expensive payloads ever put into orbit. SpaceX has a variety of people that just do not like the company because they are losing business. They're losing hundreds of millions of dollars a year to SpaceX. SpaceX is the largest launch provider in the United States. Now it's actually the largest launch provider in the world. You have all these other companies that have axes to grind over SpaceX. So the problem you have is there are things like they've blown up rockets, they've done mishaps, they've made mistakes, things like this, and they need to be held accountable for that. But you also get the long knives come out by people who are losing a lot of business to SpaceX that are ready to jump on anything. And you had a report here that it was all behind the scenes. Nobody was on the record saying anything. You know, we had nobody would say on the record, would go on the record to say anything. So all we have is just, you know, Northrop saying we cannot comment on classified missions. It got to the point where Gwynne Shotwell, who's president of SpaceX, came out and said, as far as our things, SpaceX did exactly what it was supposed to do.
End so, because that's the other part about this, is that this is a classified launch, mm-hmm. and there's only so much that people can legally say about these kinds of this kind of business. So what seems to be happening without a doubt, as Andrew pointed out, is that there is a lot of off the record. There's a lot of reading between the lines, because SpaceX coming out and saying, we've reviewed our logs. Our logs say that everything we did was fine. If we get new data, we will update you. Seems like, you know, a bound up version of what they, I'm sure, would love to go into more detail on, of exactly what they believe happened to this, or if they believe that this thing is up in orbit right now.
So it's a mystery. It is a mystery that it's one of these things that you would have to look to see if the Falcon 9 failed, if there was a problem there, what happens is all these other launches get delayed. And so because if you think the hardware's got a problem, that's what's happened before. When they had their last explosion, guess what? There was delays. And then they had, you know, the one sitting on the launch pad when that exploded, you know, there was delays. We had to figure out what's going on. Now, we're supposed to be doing a test of the Falcon Heavy tomorrow. They're going to be doing a test of firing of the engines on that. If that proceeds, I think that's a pretty good indication that NASA and the people behind the scenes who make these decisions weren't worried about the SpaceX hardware. And then if we continue on with Falcon 9 launches, which I think there's some coming up pretty soon. Let me see here. We've got another January 30th. We've got a GovSat launch. So we've got, and then we've got 10th of February, another launch. So we've got a bunch of launches coming up. If those get pushed back, all of them, then maybe there was, you know, a little splodiness.
Well, and the other weird part is, if effectively the schedule is completely unaffected and they continue to, you know, everyone's still booking and going, then whether or not it was lost or not lost, whether it's a government plot or not a government plot, whether or not SpaceX ever has to cop to the disaster or not, is irrelevant, right? Because as long as SpaceX still is getting all the business, sending everything all up, then it seems like it's still plowing forward.
Yeah, I guess when it comes, you're right. And but it comes to when people want to play the blame game, and to the people who are like, look at this, they screwed up. It's like, well, did they? Where's your how do you support that? And nobody can prove that they did. And again, if they did, then yeah, things got to be looked into. But that comes down to is answering the art, because we had some of the response we had on Twitter like, oh no, they failed. And it's like, maybe, but we don't know that. I don't know that.
Well, and we don't know. Also, all right. Let's get into conspiracy corner, right? Like, let's say that this is a very, very top secret satellite that people want to believe, that the government wants to believe, our enemies to in general know that it never made it up there. So it's certainly not up there right now. If that happens, right, and all of a sudden they start leaking out that, turns out it didn't make it, you know, there must have been some problem between either Northrop Grumman or SpaceX. Like, SpaceX just has to eat that, right? Like, you wouldn't imagine that it necessarily would be like a coordinated thing. Like, you're the government. Like, what are you gonna do? Tell the government, oh, you guys, you really made us look bad. We're definitely not gonna take your money to launch stuff into space anymore. Like, SpaceX just has to sit on it. There's nothing they can do. Like, they legally can't say, according to all of our calculations, this thing went up into orbit. They can just say what they've said, which is we all available data says we did our job and we are barred from saying anything else.
So that is a factor of it. And what's also, you know, there is some people like, yeah, maybe it is, maybe it really is up there. And there are people, some people it's like, no, you would, we would know in a couple of weeks time, like, well, a couple of weeks time can be a good advantage. The other thing too, is there was a satellite system called Misty, which we launched one like 1990, then one in 1999, which was a super secret space shuttle payload that there is reports like, oh, the first one broke up or whatever. Other people are like, no, that was actually they released like chafe or other material or debris to make it look like it broke up because it would actually had a different orbital pattern. And there's now evidence, I think, like, yeah, they did a very clever clandestine thing for putting this imaging satellite up there by putting something at a much lower orbit while they had something at a higher orbit, which was, you know, very, you know, sneaky. And that could be because this thing has a very strange orbital path to it. And, you know, one of the best theories I've heard, and when I say best, meaning I don't effing know things about, you know, what really satellites, you know, military satellite assets, what they need to be doing. But what I heard, which is kind of interesting, was that this one, because of the way the orbital seemed to be put on, was designed for watching shipping traffic around the world.
Wow.
Oh.
And, you know, we have a problem right now where like, hey, who's sending oil tankers to North Korea? Right. You know, who's doing this? Who's doing that? And that's a very, and if you, because part of the way we monitor shipping is we use, you know, like tracking, you know, things, they have, you know, GPS signals and tracking and report their positions. But if somebody does not want to, because you hear about this, like they intercepted a tanker, like how is that a hard thing to do? Turns out the ocean's very big.
Yes. and boats are very small. It's hard to find things.
The airplane over the Pacific. You know, we never found that. We maybe found debris. Like you can lose an entire airplane and whatever, not know. And so anyhow, that could be a very interesting thing. So who knows? It may not. We might know for 30 years what happened.
That's crazy.
Well, I'm glad that the Twitter mentions no. I'm glad that the rest of Twitter is so confident in exactly what happened.
Yeah, so there is a I sent Bryce a link, and so China has been aggressively pursuing a space program, and they've decided to China, like Russia, a lot of places they launch from are actually in very, very inland. You know, they're not out at we have a wonderful place in Florida to launch from, and now they're going to be doing like Brownsville, Texas, and also in the California for doing different kind of orbital inclinations. We also have Wallops Island, etc. A lot of China and Russia, they kind of sort of launch from land. Here's the problem about land.
Oh, that when stages just fall to Earth, they can land on people and things.
Yeah, people live there. Yeah. People live on land. So here's video. There was a recent Chinese launch, and this is what's going on. Watch and delight. And this is an uninhabited area, but there are people
there.
Oh my gosh. And the snark is like, yeah, they're trying to reland a booster too.
Oh, wow.
Holy moly.
Wow. Just roll the dice, huh? Like, we'll see.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to send another link to Bryce here. I'm going to send you another. This is a.
So, I mean, clearly from the reactions, people were seeing it even as it was falling. So they probably maybe even knew. Or were watching for it for when it took off.
I think they're pretty close. I think they could probably pretty much hear the rumble of that thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might even have audio. Holy crap.
Wow.
So there is a flaming booster on fire, and there's just like a real dank Instagram picture of just like, oops, I saw this flaming booster in the woods.
Now you're like across a road. It's like.
It does look like it's on a road.
Well, and there's another one. Again, uninhabited areas, guys. Uninhabited areas. I just said he's going to get the link. This is another one. So.
Oh, I remember us reporting on this one a few years ago.
Yeah. It's where an engine fell into some dude's house.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Holy crap. And so that's just like they don't have waterside or oceanside launching facilities to do this? Or they just don't care? Like.
Well, yeah, primarily what happens is that, like, in the case of Russia and China, because their space programs really, really are arms of the military, really, really are. NASA NASA, we created NASA to be the civilian sort of space agency, and it's very separate because these are military parts of the military. They put them in places where you'd want to do testing secret stuff, rockets, you know, like, you know, and the idea of like missile technology, et cetera. And so they're super, super secretive because part of the way they justify their expenditure on this is they are building military technology.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
You know, the pilots on these things are all military, active military, whatever. And we do that. We'll have the space shuttle too. We'll have a lot of, you know, Air Force people, things like that. But a lot of them can be, you know, NASA has their own civilian people, whatever. Any point is, it's military. And so that's why these secret places run. Now, also just accessibility. Russia, you know, there's, you know, to launch from like Kamchatka or something like that, you know, it's middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, it'd be a good peninsula for launching stuff. And I'm sure they've probably done some kinds of launches from there. And China, you know, we'll see where things go. They have a lot of coast. They could, but, you know.
Yeah. So. Wow. I mean, imagine that, well, just whistling into your backyard.
Oh, and the fuel for that, like those stages are probably hydrazine. And hydrazine's like super, super, super toxic to people. That's wow. Like just super toxic. So, very
good
powerful.
Thing this photographer ran right up to it to take a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good idea. But anyhow.
I mean, hey, but also. Dank Instagram.
Yeah. Progress is made. Ground. You know, rocket's hard. You know, got to explode a few things.
Oh. Holy crap. I think we can safely say that one did not go as intended.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the upper stage may have made it. I don't know about the booster. Yeah, you know,
so. And then with that, that's just what the Chinese military calls a party favor.
Yep. So, gentlemen. We used to do a thing on this show.
I remember this thing. Long ago in the before time.
When
three hosts did gather and worlds were made and unmade by their reckoning.
Yeah, it's called Journey Quest, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it was called Journey Quest!
Previously on...
Journey Quest!
The concept of resistance to fire is one as old as history itself.
I lift the corpse and wring it out like a dish towel.
So as you spray your gas at him, actually, the flame is on the edge of the flamethrower. It does ignite, and a big fireball engulfs Congo. Gentlemen, we have a problem. There's a roadblock.
Man, just outdoing himself with these recaps. This is amazing.
Amazing.
So you guys, you finished your first match. You were successful, and you hit the road.
Oh, that's right. This was the small town that we were kind of a ramp up for our, our battle.
Because if we lost, we would have had to go rebuild our image in the Mexican minor leagues. When really what we want to do is get out to California as fast as possible as top tier attraction combat talent.
So you're driving along in your RV. I think Brian may have actually kidnapped some children from the village you set on fire.
I prefer the term liberating. I'm setting them free.
Well, except now you're in charge of them. But
well,
you're,
I mean, you know, giving them a better life is what I'm in charge of, you know.
That we know of. Also, I think we're off to Bryce Vegas, right?
Yeah, you're off to Bryce Vegas. Bryce Vegas. So you're driving along at night, RV. And every time you turn it back, you look in the rearview mirror, you see the flames of the town that you set on fire.
I mutter under my breath, another one bites the dust.
And every now and then you see a little flame run away as somebody on fire tries to flee the town. And how does it make you feel?
Tell you what, it's a party favor.
I mean, look, man, we killed it, man. We burned that mother down. Dude, nailed it. Good show.
Killed it.
They won't forget this one.
Obviously this is not a nice world, you know, like there's some ugliness in this, post-apocalyptic hellscape that we found ourselves in. What's important now is that we're off to Bryce Vegas and then from there, hopefully California.
So you come to a roadblock. All you hear is there's a roadblock, right? Like driver says, hey, roadblock, and your agent. Jimmy, what's his face? He's like, hey, yeah, guys, looks like we have a little bit of a problem. And you look out the front of the RV, which is how you would look to see what's on the road. And there was like some big concrete blocks, big concrete, like road block. Like this is a serious roadblock.
It's Fans. They're fans, Justin. They probably just want an autograph. Heard how we killed it.
All right. Is there anybody else there, or is it empty aside from the blockade?
You see about 20 people standing on top of the roadblock.
Good turnout.
With rifles.
With rifles.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Let's hop on out. Let's go talk to them. Sure, it's a misunderstanding. I'm sure they're just fans. They want to take some photos, selfies. It takes a little longer. They probably have to draw a sketch of us standing awkwardly with our arms over with them, but it'll be great.
I'm just going to let you know right now, Brian, if they want the kids, we're giving them the kids.
Let's put a pin in that.
I just want to let you know that's opening offer for me.
Okay. Yeah, let's just. Kids. Okay, let's let me do the talking then. So I quickly walk on out of Mike. I'm like, howdy, how are you guys? How long days and pleasant nights.
You hear the sound of like a metal door close, footsteps, and somebody walking around the roadblock.
Is it what time? Is it dark?
It's dark. Okay, it's dark. There's a moon out though, and it's still the glow of the town on fire and back. I think there was an oil refinery behind there too, which is now caught on fire.
I really quick take my one good hand and do that thing where I breathe into my hand and then inhale to figure out if I have bad breath because I don't want to make a bad impression.
Well, you look up and you see a guy, a lanky guy, about 6'5". He's wearing one of those leather jackets with the tassels that hang down there, lots of turquoise.
Nice.
Like, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I'm Rusty McNail.
Rusty McNail. Hey, Justin, it's Rusty McNail.
Hey, Rusty, you want some kids?
No, Justin, I told you.
Oh, folks, those are them just rumors. Anyhow, let me point on over here to my right, which would be your left. And if you notice the flaming glaze while you were staring at my roadblock, you maybe did not notice Rusty McNail's Beef Jerky Emporium.
Oh, my gosh. I love beef jerky. Do you have special flavors? Can we go for a tour?
Come on in, boys. And all of a sudden, the generator turns on. Lights come up. Starts blinking, flashing lights. Rusty McNail's Beef Jerky Emporium, right? Right? Calliope music's playing. Opens up the door. And you see bins and bins and bins of beef jerky.
Oh, my gosh.
Every kind of beef jerky. Brian, name a beef jerky.
Venison. Turkey jerky or jalapeno flavored jerky.
Brian, my son, you lack imagination. That is with just in your arm's reach right now. Okay.
Fish jerky.
What's that?
Fish jerky.
Oh my God. Fish hey, jerky. Brian, I found this Japanese beef jerky here at Rusty McNail's.
Oh my gosh. This is amazing. This is the answer to my dreams.
Rusty McNail's like, why does your beef jerky have a pig on the cover?
What is mine?
But I is this not yours? I thought I just picked it up. It does have a pig. I assume it's pork. It's pork.
Pork jerky, son. Pork jerky. Get your meat straight. While we have beef, ostrich, pork, pheasant, salmon, halibut, kangaroo, baboon, homo sapien. We've got rhesus. We've got alligator. We've got every kind of beef jerky you can imagine here.
Let's just go ahead and I dial that one back there, Rusty. Would you say Homo sapien?
Did you say Homo sapien?
Do you want two kids?
Justin, no, we can't give him the kids. He'll make jerky out of them. Hey, do you accept kids and make them into jerky?
I don't know what kind of operation you think I run here, gentlemen. This is a straight up operation. This is done on the legit.
Okay, sure. I start to lift my shirt to prove that I'm not wearing a wire.
And I happen to decide those local laws and ordinances. But anyhow, we're not here to talk about my secret ingredients. Again, it is a post-apocalypse, okay?
Rusty, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna level with you here. We're world weary. We have a long way to go. We got a short time to get there.
Try some beef jerky.
Listen, we're happy to go pick up some beef jerky, pay you on our way. But how about we go about moving that blockade so we can just zoom right on by after we make our purchases.
We're going to move that blockade, son. Don't worry about that.
All right. Well, good. So,
are you a spicy man? Are you a spicy man? You look like a spicy man.
I lift my head up from the other side where I'm looking at all the beef jerkies. I'm like, I like spicy beef jerky.
You like spicy beef jerky?
Yeah, all yeah. Right. No, I like it a lot with the crushed red peppers on there. It's good. It's good.
Oh, I got some crushed red peppers, spicy beef jerky. I got the meat stick. I got the beef jerky, whatever. I'm a meat stick kind of guy myself.
Sure. You know, it seems like maybe it would be hard to get all these animals out in the wastes. I mean, you have some pretty exotic beef jerkies here. Alligator, like, I'm out in West Texas, I don't even know where an alligator would be.
Well, I had a large inventory before the apocalypse. Remember that. And then traffic down this highway hasn't been what it's been. But anyhow, you want a meat stick? Would you like a meat stick, son?
No,
you want a slab?
Yeah, slab me.
Slab. Hold on one second. Earl, get the forklift. You're going to love this.
Oh, my God.
And you hear, and there's a back room there, like those plastic sort of dividing little slats there, like there's another part of the warehouse near. Beep, beep, beep. This all electronic sounds moving forklift, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, flashing lights, yellow lights come through here. The plastic curtain parts. There is a forklift, and there is on there a pallet. And the pallet is a large-ass slab.
This might be a little bit more than I can consider. Should I just tear off a chunk of this, or?
Son, you can do whatever you want. It's all yours. All yours.
Well, right on. I take the.
Wait a minute, Brian. Before you touch blue and make it true, what is the price on this here slab, Rusty?
Price? It's friendship. It's friendship. That's the price.
See, look, it's free. It's free jerky, man. Free jerky.
So he just gets all that.
How about you there, buddy? What's your favorite?
I kind of like a teriyaki myself. I like a teriyaki, right? Beef jerky. Yeah,
teriyaki beef, like that wagyu.
Yes, yeah, I think yeah, the wagyu. Japanese Kobe?
You want Kobe or wagyu?
I'm going to go with wagyu.
Wagyu, okay. Earl, I'll J 8.
I peel off a bit of my slab and I smell the jerky and give it a little taste.
Best jerky you've ever smelled.
I wolf down as much of the jerky as I can.
Goes back there. Son, do you want a meat stick or slab?
I'm going to get the meat stick.
Okay. You like that, son? You want a beer, some ice cold to eat with your beef jerky?
With my mouth still full, I say, "You have beer full corn?" And I hold out my hand for a beer.
Opens up, points to a bunch of refrigerated cabinets. Refrigerated, you know, and there's like every kind of beer you can imagine.
Dude, I hop on my from toe to toe, get with giddy excitement, run over, pop open. I grab three bottles, two of which I put under my left arm, and the other one is under the chainsaw arm. And I come back,
son, let me get you a cooler. And he starts putting beers into the cooler.
I am beside myself with joy. It's working. In fact, I say so to Justin. I say with my mouth still full, "It's working. It's great."
All right. Hey,
Forklift comes in here, and you're like, Justin, you're confused because you're like, is that a telephone pole? Like what the hell is this? Am I fencing? Is this Home Depot? What did I just? Son, that is the meat stick.
All right. This is.
But it's made of a bunch of smaller meat sticks that are just, you know, that you can fit in your mouth. So don't worry. It's like the cord of meat sticks, but it's big and huge. Drops it on your feet on some butcher paper. It's very hygienic here.
I taste the meat stick and I imagine that it's amazing.
Yeah,
I helpfully walk over,
trimming a bonsai tree on the side of a cliff as you practice your ninja skills.
Yeah, I walk over to the beef steak. I say, "Allow me to get that for you, my friend." And I start up the chainsaw and just sort of slice off like it's a logging competition, a giant pizza-sized.
Rusty McNeil slaps his knees, laughing. I like your style, son. I like your style.
All right, Rusty. You know, I'll tell you what. I don't know exactly how we're going to get this here on the bus, but I think we're turning into pumpkins here, old friend. We appreciate your hospitality. It's about time for us to hit the old dusty trail.
Real quick, do you have like a luggage cart or something on wheels we can just stack up
We're going to pack that up and put that on your RV for you. So when you go on your way, you have beef jerky wherever you go.
That's great. Score one for the good guys. I call this a successful random encounter that we had out in the wastes.
Yeah, gentlemen, hold on a second. Earl, bring in the chairs. Earl brings in three wooden chairs, rocking chairs. Rocking chairs is amazing little kind of like beer cozy holsters that like allow you to rock back and forth but keep your beer from splashing over. It's like, it's an invention of mine.
It's fantastic. I bet these would work really good in the tour bus when we're on the way. Speaking of which, yeah, I think Justin's right. We really should.
You're going to be on your way shortly. Okay. You're going to be on your way shortly. That is a jerky promise.
It was a jerky.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we're just going to go get back on the bus.
Whoa. I got to tell you a story first.
Okay.
Do we have time for a story? Let me. Okay.
I mean, we're going to have to keep this one tight, though, Rusty, because we definitely got another town to make.
Just have another stick there, my son. Right?
All right.
I'll pour you another beer. Everybody's good.
Yeah.
The crew on the bus, giving them beef jerky. Little niños of yours, they're adorable. They're out back playing with the cattle.
Look at that. Everything's picturesque. Hey,
you want to know what? I feel like
they're in the pen playing with the cattle. They seem real happy. Good. Yep.
They seem real happy. Like you just break their hearts to take them away.
Anyhow, so I lost track of time since things went south.
Yeah, things got a little funny. I'd imagine time gets a little bit odd with no internet to check.
Top of the world out here with my jerky emporium. Top of the world with my jerky emporium. Then everything goes south.
You still got the jerky. You look like a winner.
I almost didn't. You see, what I had to do is I had to lock up my jerky emporium. I had to shutter it up. I had to bolt everything down. I stood there on the roof with my .22 rifle.
I was podcasting to nobody for months.
I didn't know much about guns. I was really should have got some, but anyhow, point is, I had to protect it. A lot of people try to take my beef jerky from me.
Mm.
They'd say, "Ooh, we're starving. Ooh, we have a bus of little orphans. We're starving. Like, ooh, we're from the government. We're starving."
Yeah. I mean,
did not let them take it.
It's a free market, man. That's the way capitalism works, man. Mm-hmm. They can't be expected to just, what is this? The apocalypse didn't happen because Bernie Sanders was elected.
I read a lot of that Noam Chomsky. Makes a lot of sense. Anyhow, point is, I sat there on my roof and I protected my beef jerky for everything I could. Everybody came near me. I told them, no, come near me. They did. I shot them.
Okay.
Shot a lot of people.
What happened, Rusty? Because now you have at least a crew of 20, and you've barricaded the road, so now you have like a following.
I fought Claude to keep hold of everything I have here. Then one day, tank rolled up, another tank, and I was surrounded.
Like by the army.
But they were covered in glitter.
Oh,
and house music was playing.
Oh,
they call it right.
This sounds like a fabulous army.
Yeah. Well, it was shiny, and then a man stood forth. Tall man, 10 foot. I don't know if it was all man.
Was he possibly part machine? Maybe enhanced.
Look, machine, cyborg, what have you?
Yeah.
Did he have the exquisite, delicate chin of a Japanese host?
Oddly enough, I thought more of a Japanese prostitute, but you know what you're saying. Anyhow, he told me I either had to make a deal with him.
Okay.
Or get destroyed.
Oh, well, I mean, that's not a very good bargaining position. I have some audiobooks on negotiating higher performance fees.
Told me it would take my jerky emporium away from me, and I fought everything to keep this, and I knew I was outmatched.
Yeah. Okay. Well. That's a cool
Seems
story.
Like a real tale, my friend. What'd you do?
Really, just
I
just,
agreed to supply him. Agreed to give him what he needed. He let me keep my jerky emporium.
Yeah, yeah.
But he takes a big cut of everything I make.
Oh, okay. Well, giving away your product probably isn't helping either.
No. And so I decided, after he left, I'd get my vengeance on him.
Oh, okay. You're gonna take him out.
Gentlemen, follow me.
Follow me.
Oh my God.
You go through the plastic dividers. You try not to pay too much attention to, you see animals, you know, being hung from hooks and stuff. And some of them look maybe people-ish. But anyhow, so it's not paying attention to that. We go through another divider.
Just rumors. More rumors.
Go into a back area. And there, sitting on a table. Gentlemen, I want you to do me a favor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is one of them atom bombs. I got them from a military silo out there. I want you all to deliver this to Bryce Vegas.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Sure.
So we need to bring and detonate an atom bomb.
He didn't say detonate. Sorry, Rusty. Did you mean for us to detonate it?
Well, yeah. I mean, timer. I'm not going to ask you to press a button and make it go boom while you're there. You're not an idiot.
Well, and I'm assuming if we do this, there'll be a little bit of jerky in it for the two of us.
You just got a tree trunk of jerky.
Yeah. You can never have too much. I look up at the echo of a maniacal Bryce in Bryce Vegas.
You just got a lot of jerky.
Gentlemen, I know. I'm a syndicated anarchist. I know I've got to work out some medium exchange of which you would like, but then it's promptly demolish that because it becomes an infrastructure and becomes a way to imprison people.
Okay. We got it. We got it, Dr. Chomsky. let's go ahead and understand each other fully. You are asking us to bring this weapon of mass destruction into the center of a town that, although is built by a lunatic, and believe you me, we're not going to give you any sympathy for Bryce. However, there are assuredly hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands, of innocent civilians in an area that will be murdered by this weapon, right?
I mean, say, if we gave them a fair warning, like we just announced that the timer was ticking, you got 20 minutes to drive away.
I mean, then Bryce would just fly away on his crazy
Well, we won't tell Bryce, obviously. We'll keep it a secret from him, and he won't know.
Alert! All non-Bryces, yes. Please leave. If you're a Bryce, nothing's wrong. Please, exactly. Stay still.
And then he'll be like, oh, what's that? And he won't have time to... You can't outrun an atomic blast.
Gentlemen, it's pretty much more or less what I'm asking you to do. But I want you, I'm going to make it worth your while. Not just all the beef jerky you can carry or eat.
Okay.
Come over here.
Oh,
goes over to a giant vault. Starts to spin it. Yeah, after the thing happened, you know, and after I made my deal, I started exploring all around here. That's when I found myself my A-bomb. And I also was looking around, and I found some other things in this military installation, and I found the special secret warehouse where they kept all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, right on.
Let me show you what I found. Slides open the door. Earl, you get out of here, Earl. You're not allowed to see this, Earl. Earl shuffles away.
I cross my my remaining fingers in the hope that it's either a robotic dong or a hand.
Door opens. Next time on Journey.
You're killing me.
All right, you ready for picks?
Picks.
Hey, I got a pick. I watched that movie I, Tonya over the weekend, and it was good. And it was strange because they really wear on their sleeve the fact that, like, well, you know, all the parties who are reporting any of this all have reasons to claim that this part was or was not them or whatever. And they make it appropriately ambiguous in the movie. But I don't know. I enjoyed it quite a bit. The acting is amazing. Margot Robbie, there's just this one scene where she's doing her makeup, looking into the camera, directly into the camera. It's like 30 seconds long. And you see her tear up, fight back tears, put on a big fake plastic smile, and you felt like this was a real person and you were experiencing some messed up stuff.
I'm pumped to see it. I mean, obviously, something very, very, you know, it's always interesting whenever a story that famous that's been reported on to death, where everybody is alive, you know, is kind of put back out there. But I mean, certainly all the critical reviews are amazing for it, so I'm pumped to see it.
There's a great moment because obviously it's none of the real people; it's all actors. But there's a moment that as Margot Robbie is playing Tanya Harding, she's pumping a shotgun, firing it, looking at the camera, saying, "This part definitely did not happen, or I definitely did not do this." So it was great. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I think that's. Haven't heard what Nancy Kerrigan thinks of the movie yet, but
she said I was a victim or something like that. She had a comment about that, kind of a quick sort of response on that.
I'm curious to see it. Here's my pick. I saw the new Dave Chappelle Netflix specials, and as a huge fan of Dave Chappelle in general and his stand-up specifically, I believe that the last two, Equanimity and The Bird Revelation, are not only, I think, better than the previous Netflix specials that he did, they are among, I think, the strongest of his career. There's just, you know, he's such a unique voice, even when I think he is being controversial, which I think these all four of the Netflix specials have kind of gotten him into a certain elements of hot water, specifically with the trans community. I think he is fascinating. He is obviously a very a deep thinker, and Equanimity specifically is one of his best. I'm so glad he's still doing this stuff.
I saw them too. I enjoyed them very, very, very much. Enjoyed them, and yeah, likewise. It's very, he as you said, is a very much a deep thinking comedian. Like, just a lot of people have fun on the surface. He's a guy you look at this, like, man, this guy has really kind of gone into this and thought about this, because he has kind of a different take than, maybe I don't agree with that take, but man, that take's a really good take on something.
Yeah, no,
and just it's in point of sincerity. He's a very stern, sincere, earnest kind of guy.
Well, and I think part of it is, if you look at, compare those specials to some of the ones that he did earlier, he's obviously fascinated by race and roles in society and compassion versus non-compassion. And what's fascinating now is that not only has he has gone into this new stratosphere of wealth and influence, but also he has kind of shed this element of shared persecution that he had in some of his earlier specials. That was kind of what rooted everything together. And now to watch him kind of turn into this unknowable object is fascinating, because a lot of comedians can't do that. You know, Richard Pryor was never really able to. Eddie Murphy was never really able to come to grips with the idea that they were no longer the guy that they made, that made them famous. And Chappelle, I think, has done a great job with it.
Yeah, I think that because he's still aware of, like, what. So he knows he's rich. Talking about he's rich, and but it's funny because you watch one of them, he talks about how rich Kevin Hart is, you know, kind of in comparison, and sort of puts it into perspective. But the idea that it's still different. Things are still different. You know, in his house, he's still a dad trying to deal with kids who, you know, like Kevin Hart more than him or whatever. And, you know, the other kinds of challenges he deals with. So very, very. Yeah, I enjoyed that, too. My pick. I've picked this before and I'm going to pick this again. If I use Google Docs a lot. I use Google Docs for, you know, I write using, you know, whatever I prefer, like Scrivener or whatever. But when it comes to doing a lot of stuff, you know, if I have to collaborate, et cetera, I do that. And I'm going to tell you, one of the things I think that a skill that is really worthwhile is learning how to do a spreadsheet. If you do spreadsheets, you're like, yeah, of course, that's like the most basic thing in the world. But if you don't use spreadsheets, you don't know what you're missing. Spreadsheets are an incredibly powerful tool for predicting, for estimating, for seeing things. I use spreadsheets for my books, right? So like I have where I see like how much revenue my books are making, my own self-published ones are making on a daily basis. I look at to see, I calculate what my ones I work with other publishers where I get those statistics for that. So I know almost on an hourly by hour by basis what revenue or whatever is coming in from. Not that I need to obsess and look at it that much, but it certainly helps for me in planning and running a business and understanding these things and figuring out how I need to apport my time and promote and whatever. And it's funny because like I'll deal with my agent like, oh yeah, you know, you're getting this royalty thing and it's going to be this much. I'm like, yeah, I know.
well, how did you know? Like, I have a spreadsheet. I plug these points in there. You know, I follow this stuff. And I do that with other things. I have another project I'm working on that's a technical project, and a lot of different factors playing into it. And, you know, a spreadsheet allows you to put data here, put data there, and do some math and give you an answer. And you can say, oh, yeah, this is doable. We can make this thing happen, et cetera. So, again, as artists and creatives, we tend to avoid things like spreadsheets. But spreadsheets can be a tool that can give you a lot of power to predict and understand what's going on. Not just financially. If you're writing a book and you want to keep track of how many words you're doing per page, per day, or whatever, it's just another – it's a really, really useful tool. So, there you go.
Dude, I'll tell you what.
Spreadsheets.
No, John, who I work with on The Contender and a bunch of other stuff, that's his happy place. He just falls into a pile of spreadsheets and wraps them all around himself to make him warm.
Well, you can, you know, if you want to build a business, you know, I have friends that, you know, find themselves often in like really, really, really dire straits. They'll have large amounts of money coming in and it doesn't come in and whatnot. And you're like, well, I think I'm okay to spend this much this month. And, you know, it's like, you got to put that data in some tables, take a look at there, spread that out, see there. And Jeff Bezos is now the richest person in history. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos is worth like $106 billion, right? Amazon is a company that functions on margins, 2% here, 3% there. These tiny little margins, and that is often very much what makes a business successful. We've all learned this. The three of this could be a good after things discussion, but we'll put it into weird things for right now, is that, you know, we've all sell stuff. Justin, Brian, and I all sell stuff. We all do things like this. If you get your shipping and handling wrong, what you tell a customer what it's going to cost to ship something and forgetting what it costs to pay somebody time-wise to do that, you're like, oh, you know, I've got a little margin. It cost me only 30 cents here or whatever. That adds up.
Yep.
That adds up, you know. And, you know, and also being able to know like, oh, you know what? Because I save my money here, I can lower the cost of this item here. Pardon me. You know, these things make the difference between businesses succeed and fail. So that's my thought. So Spreadsheets. Yay. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.